You're listening to Conversations That Matter with your host, Terry Conrad.
Welcome to Mobile Agent TV. We are live from the Banff Western Connection. This is a special episode of Mobile Agent TV. It's a mashup between Mobile Agent TV and Conversations That Matter, hosted by Terry Conrad. Dave Faulkner does send his regrets that he can't join us today.
Hi, Dave.
But he did say that Terry was a much better looking fill-in. That is true. Than himself. So welcome. So
we're having a beer for you, Dave.
So we're going to have a great conversation, and we'll see where it goes. But I want to introduce today's guests. We have Bill Matter, who is the CEO of the Saskatchewan Association of Realtors.
Hello.
We have Jeff Turner, who is the president of Real Satisfied.
Welcome. Thank you.
Terry Conrad of Conversations That Matter and Agent Quest, as well as Kelly Scar, who is the team leader at the Up Real Estate Group in Calgary.
You got it.
Awesome.
Good job.
Well done. Yeah, thank you.
And we should say where we are.
We are. Well, it says on the screen, we are live from the Banff Western Connection. It is a real estate conference that happens here in Western Canada every 2 years. Started back in 94. Before we get to that conversation, if you do want to ask our panel questions, you can tweet using the hashtag MATVLive, as well as get us on Twitter at Mobile Agent TV. I will, when I get an opportunity, turn on the Q&A feature on the blog so you guys can ask those questions. But on that note, Bill, this is sort of a really special event for you for a lot of ways. But talk to our audience who may have not been here to this event before and its history.
Well, it's we're really excited about this. And this sweatshirt is the first ever Banff Western Connection apparel. And I don't normally wear this color, but
it's really nice. On
it looks
you.
Really good.
Yeah. 1994, and it actually doesn't fit quite the same as it did in 1994. But anyway, it's happened every second year since 94. So we've done it over 20 years now. It's a great event. And we originally started with the four Western provinces, basically a conference for them to take the place of each of our provincial conferences. So we were all putting a lot of resources into it and felt it was a great idea to put it together. We chose this resort as our venue, and it worked out great. But we draw now from across the country, realtors and leaders from the industry all across the country. And actually now we have been getting people, some great speakers from the U.S., but also get agents from the U.S. that come out as well. But it's a great opportunity to learn, to meet your peers from across the country, a great networking environment, and you couldn't find a better location. So we just love having it. We love hosting the event. We've got the hotel jam-packed. It's full of people. There isn't an empty room in the house. Our sessions today, we're full. We've got over 650 delegates. It's just a great event. We love doing it. We love having people come here. And if you haven't come before, we have already booked the rooms for 2017. So.
Can I just say, like, I know you work so hard on putting together the program for these conferences. They're only every 2 years, and you're working, like, I mean, how much time did you spend the last couple of months?
We do. I want it to be really clear that the four Western provinces split the workload. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. Every province has a specific job, and everybody pitches in. Our staffs do a fabulous job of working together. I've been doing the speakers bookings for the last three sessions now, the last 6 years, and it takes a lot of time, but all of us start, I mean, we start working, we meet again here at the hotel in December of this year to start working on 2017. So, I mean, we don't do a whole lot of work this December, but starting probably the middle of 2016, I'll be booking speakers probably mid.
The world changes so much in 2 years.
Exactly.
You're planning topics and speakers too far in advance. You're missing opportunities.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is what I think.
And we will
so
add.
Awesome.
But I mean, if Jeff and Terry will come back in 2017, I'll book them right now.
Hey.
Kelly too.
You've done
the last two in a row, so we can't.
Yeah.
And Michael, three, any of these guys, if they want to come back, they're always welcome.
So, I mean, it's one of the most spectacular settings for, I mean, in the world, much less for a real estate conference. It's fantastic.
It's almost not believable.
Yeah.
I'll send photos back, and people say, that it's not real.
Well, I mean, a lot of the stuff that we take in California, a lot of the stuff that we take in California, I look at and I'm like, that is not
cool. That's all green.
I
actually live in Compton.
So, Bill, why the very unusual and probably a lot of people are jealous of the every other year style format? Why that format?
Well, again, we started, 94. You'll notice 94 was the first year, which is an even year. And now we're on the odd year. So we had 1 year. We tried to do it every year and realized real early that it was just too much for our staffs. Unless we were going to hire a professional meeting manager or do something that way, there's just no way we could do it. So it's been every second year since that time, and it just works great. I mean, there's a couple of things. It's easier for our staffs, but it's also, if you do something every year, it becomes just an everyday thing. People look forward to it. They're anxious to have it come back. But every second year, it just seems to work.
Perfect. Terry, I want to pawn it over to you a little bit and maybe like lead us into a conversation about the takeaways from day one. You and I sat down about a couple hours ago, and we talked about sort of the themes and where this wanted to go. Then we left that conversation, and we went into Jeff Turner's chat with the public, and maybe set up maybe what where we want this conversation to go, because I think it's very interesting and timely with all the noise in the real estate industry.
Great question. Okay, so and Michael and I had sort of decided that the theme of the day had sort of seen the flavor had been, you know, customer experience. It seemed to come up over and over again, whether it was John Montgomery. That's so stupid. He introduced me to him, and I'm like, oh, he looks so familiar. Anyway, all of the speakers this morning were amazing, super inspirational, talking specifically high level, you know, sort of what it means to deliver a great customer experience. And this is a common theme we're hearing over and over and over again. But then, of course, we couldn't have anticipated quite what we were going to expect when we went to the Hear Direct session, which was 2 hours long and, frankly, went by so fast. Super interesting. I think that the conversation is really – let's start here. Was anybody surprised by some of the answers that the consumer panel were giving? Well, I know you wouldn't.
I was shocked.
Tell me why you were surprised.
Because I'm not saying they were disgruntled consumers. I don't think they were wowed consumers. And I found that their expectations were not unreasonable.
Right.
I think in this industry, doing 21 years in this industry, I have met the occasional client who I deem has unreasonable expectations for my services. You had six people up there who, throughout the questions that Jeff was asking them, had very simple expectations.
Well, their expectation of an email within 2 to 3 days.
Shocked me.
When
not 2 to 3 hours,
2 to 3 days.
2 to 3 days. That was, to me, unbelievable.
The worst part is people didn't meet that.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't surprised by anything other than the fact that these weren't a group of consumers that had set the bar so high that no real estate professional could reasonably be expected to meet that consistently.
Yeah.
What they had done was said, I have what I thought were, in some cases, almost, seriously, if every real estate client was like that, you know, the real estate industry would never complain about
exactly.
Consumer again.
That's right. Okay.
And yet, somehow, they all had experiences that were really quite mediocre. And some experiences that I would say were deplorable based upon what you should expect. From
maybe mediocre to us, but it certainly was not mediocre to them. I said this earlier to you. I kind of felt for the panel. I kind of understood where they were coming from and not getting the responses that they expected. You know, Johnson on the very end, you know, 18 days without communication. And I think I had three big takeaways from that. It was communication, it was expectations, it was value.
Yeah.
And
all those three levels. Sorry, Kelly, to interrupt, all those three things are kind of the same thing. If you can communicate your value, and if you could communicate
The expectation,
and you can communicate, all those issues sort of go together. I mean, communication.
Their issues would have been resolved. There would have been no issues at all.
That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that shocked me was that it was a panel of you know, people that didn't have crazy expectations. And here's the other thing, and we can get into that too as well. If the agent had just done what they did, they wouldn't have to worry about marketing tomorrow because they're building a business.
So what was interesting to me is that, Jerry, the consumer closest to me, his agent actually did exactly what he said. He presented some hype. This house is great. It's got these features. It'll sell within 10 days. And when it didn't, his commitment to it was over.
Yes. That's right. Yeah.
So he did, Jerry didn't hear it, but in that listing presentation, that agent actually communicated to him, I'm interested in this because I believe it's going to sell in 10 days. And then when it didn't, the agent did what you could reasonably expect, given that, and the agent dropped off the face of the earth. I don't think, so I listened to all of that, and in my head, what I'm hearing is, these consumers don't have a prior sufficient understanding of what to demand from an agent. As a consumer, they don't know what they have the right to ask for. And so they come into it, especially the consumers who don't do a lot of transactions, with this feeling that, okay, this is a professional I'm sitting with. Anything they said to them was the correct expectation. And so the fact that didn't happen is a fault not just of those agents. It's actually a fault. And that's why I posed it this way. It's a fault of the industry.
Yeah,
the consumer doesn't have a higher expectation from agents. If the consumer had a higher, it's like the.
But they don't even understand what the agent does. They don't even know the job.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. So we've had this conversation before,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All the time. It's like every 6-7 months, somebody complains about, you know, the quality of photos on the internet.
Right.
And we've been having that conversation since 2007 when digital camera was available.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know why that never changes?
Because there's no industry standard.
No, because this consumer doesn't demand that it changes, because the consumer doesn't understand that they can demand for it to change.
But even if they did, then they're stuck on that whole marketing piece.
But again, it's about one element of the piece. Whose responsibility is it to educate the consumer that they can and should demand more from the real estate professional?
Well, and this is where it gets really interesting, and I think it gets a little mucky.
Question.
It gets a little mucky
really
at the association level. I mean, I don't know how to do this delicately. I have a real problem with the Korea ads.
Easy enough.
I have a real problem with the Korea ads.
She's not rich.
Because I can say it now because I'm not licensed anymore. We have these ads, and we're advertising that we, you know, if you were a realtor, you wouldn't have planes zooming over your house and rattling your home, or you wouldn't have nudists living next door to you. Does that set the stage to understand and
I'm sorry,
expect?
Why would that be something you would want?
Yeah.
No, how could a realtor control that?
Well, you know this, Terry, the recent ad with the SWAT team.
Yeah.
Yes.
The best consumer response of any of them. And again, it's not intended to be serious.
I know.
It's not serious. But it's intended to alert the consumer to the fact that the realtor can do more. So it's a start in that direction.
Right.
Whether, you know, whether we like the message or whether we like the way it works or not.
I understand the humor angle that the association was trying to take there. But my firm belief is that with their string of like 3 commercials, it diminished the value of what we do.
I think it does.
I apologize for our American viewers. We're talking about Canadian advertising.
I'm sure our American viewers have no problem with any of the associations.
But back to the point of whose job is it to educate the consumers? And again, I think it's all of ours.
I mean,
it's all of ours. It's our association.
It's our responsibility.
To show what our members can do. And it's part of the consumers to do a little bit of research on what they can expect or what they should expect.
So where does it fall? Like where does the responsibility lie? Does it lie with the association, with the board, with the broker, with the agent?
Yes.
We've discussed this discussion many, many times.
The answer is yes.
The last PwC that we had a bar camp and we discussed the broker model. Right. And I said the broker model is broken. Jeff fundamentally disagreed with that.
I think the whole
model itself now having
I still disagree with it.
I reflected on that and I have come to an agreement with you.
Sorry, you're apologizing.
No, I'm not apologizing because we didn't really get into a fisticuffs. But at the end of the day, I think that they're You're right. There are no set standards. The boards try to set their standards with respect to education, but the education and the standards within the education is so low, where agents like us that have been in the business for a long time and our sole purpose is to exceed our clients' expectations.
That's my marketing plan.
Right. There's a bar. Yeah. We're here, and the industry standards are somewhere down here. So
yeah, but
how do we balance that out is the question.
I mean, you do it by the market. The market should demand that. I mean, there's a level there that the regulators have to meet or they have to demand. But anything above that, I think it's up to an innovative broker or an innovative agent. They raise it themselves by demanding it of themselves.
Right.
The consumers, but the more consumers see that, then their business improves. I think there's.
So
but
how
I don't
are
think,
they seeing it though? I mean, wasn't it interesting to hear that so many of them were not finding, they were not discovering their agents
on the internet.
Okay,
yeah.
So here you do that.
Like, no.
That's, honestly, we just know that. They're always the sellers. Sellers have always been that way and likely will always be that way.
See, when you said nothing shocked me, and perhaps it's my. I should have known better, but I was about to go. The second most shocking thing was all six of them in their ability to get a few agents to interview went about a process that I thought I. One of them said we drove past signs, and if I got a good feeling, I wrote down the name.
Yeah.
In today's
it's almost like using a Ouija board.
Yeah,
right.
Actually,
it was his wife.
His wife, right? His wife.
Or I'm basing my decision off the number of signs that agent has in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I'm basing that decision on the fact that. I think that they have more knowledge on the neighborhood than somebody else because they have more signs than
that.
That's not
that's
unreasonable.
Not unusual.
That is not
that's
unreasonable.
Not unreasonable.
Yeah.
But I'm amazed in today's world, which we talk about all the time, the ability to communicate with friends and families and get recommendations. And the recommendations, how the realtor behaves, was another thing too as well. But I'm surprised that they were using the same methods from 97 to.
See, but I'm not. And here's why.
Okay, tell me why you're not shocked.
Okay.
It shocks me.
We've got thousands. So we got 70,000 plus people on Real Satisfied, and we send out customer satisfaction.
Congratulations
surveys.
On that!
Oh,
that is amazing.
Yeah, it is.
That is amazing.
300 in Saskatchewan.
300 is 30% of Saskatchewan. 30% of the Saskatchewan Association of Realtors.
Wow.
Shameless plug. And here's my point: we get thousands of survey responses a week. The average. This is the average across all on seller surveys. Where? How did you find your agent? 80%, 79 to 81, it fluctuates. Find their agent on the seller side as a result of a referral from a friend or having previously done business with them. You know what the second most common is on the surveys? Yard signs.
Yeah.
So this is not a surprise.
No, no.
But
it is a surprise to me because then why did six of those people, if it's 80%, why didn't four, maybe five of them, got an unbelievable recommendation from a friend or family.
Yes.
That's the shocking part because
cool.
My business is built 80% plus on repeat referral.
Totally.
So that shocks
totally.
Me.
Yes.
The thing that did shock me was the fact that two
yes.
of those four people who used the referral from a friend
didn't
use that referral because the referral came in so completely almost with, and it sounded like an entitlement.
Entitled.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Entitled.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get this because I was referred by a friend.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to work that hard at it. I should get it. And so they didn't show the proper excitement, enthusiasm, respect for the fact that this referral came in.
Absolutely.
And it was, and you could see it and you could feel it in their energy. They were as disappointed about that as anyone.
Well, one of the comments
they wanted to use those people.
One of the comments that I think it was Dan. He was the guy in the orange shirt in the center. He said something that I've been saying now for the last couple of weeks about the Packers loss to the Seahawks. It was theirs to lose, right? And,
well,
and he said that
and that was really bad because that was a family friend since he was 7 years old.
Yeah.
He's known this person since he was 7 years old.
And it was hers to lose.
And she
just blew it.
And dropped the ball.
Jeremy, can you let me know if the sound is good on Twitter? Thanks, Jeremy.
It's be late now.
He's going to do it. but on that note, I know Dave, my co-host, has said many times on the show, is even if it's a client that's using him for the fourth time, when we come in, because this industry is so fluid, especially in the last 5 years, that they are forced to listen to the 2-hour listening presentation or they won't do their job. That is.
That has to be trained. And that's my point. You can't, that's a discipline. That's a mindset that you don't have to be born with that. As a broker, as an owner, someone should be sitting down and saying, this is the way it's going to work and this is the way it has to work. And the missing element in all this, and somebody brought
accountability.
It's accountability and oversight. That's the missing element. Because I actually think that there are brokers out there that actually do a really great job of training, really great job of putting systems in place, and then a not so great job of oversight and making certain that the training that they put in place actually makes its way into the field and is applied consistently.
Okay. So let's segue over to Kelly Scar on that exact same topic. Kelly, you are the team leader of a team. Yeah. You have done a great job of defining your brand and building your brand.
Yeah.
When you send other agents who I got a chance to meet in Calgary, awesome agents that work with you, when you send them out their reflection of your brand, how do you make sure that that is a consistent behavior, like Jeff was just saying, so that it reflects well on Kelly Scar and the real estate brand?
I think it's brought up in simplified. One word is mentorship, and that's it. So I got a text message from Rebecca, one of my agents, earlier today. One of the things that we provide to our agents is myself going out with the agent and showing properties together and showing her what the system is and showing her how to prepare for that and showing her how to set the appointments and then pulling everything into Evernote and being that paperless agent and then going out and her shadowing me for like the first probably 5 to 8 to 10 showings that she's going to go on either with that client or whoever else.
But you made some big decisions over the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
Right? How you're going to run.
Absolutely.
That required you to go back and make decisions that I don't think a lot of people would have made.
No, this has been an evolution over the last few years where my mindset in getting into the business of building a team shifted drastically from me getting in the business of building a team and saying, well, I'm going to make as much money as I possibly can, to my coach having that first conversation with me and her making the decision as to whether she was going to deal with me and coach me or not. She said to herself after having an hour-long conversation with me, if this guy doesn't change his mindset within the next conversation, I'm done with him. And so the things that we talked about were things like, this isn't about you. This is about the people that you're working with. This is about creating a great culture. And at the end of the day, having your core values of having all of your systems and everything that you do envelop the core values that you've created for your team, for yourself, for your family. And if you look at your business from that perspective, the systems will run flawlessly. The consumer will have a fantastic experience.
You're supposed to speak up a little bit, Jeff. Keep going.
The consumers will have a fantastic experience. And also at the end of the day, the agents on the other end of the transaction will also have a fantastic experience.
And that is that buy-in that I think, and you're attracting certain agents, like I've spoken to Paula, who's on your team, who was so attracted to what you were building and how you've been building it. And she's inspired by the business that you're developing. And she knows that she's in a spot where she's going to be a better agent, frankly, because she's getting such strong mentorship. Mm. And I think that's really powerful.
Okay. So I'm going to take it. I mean, obviously,
let me just end with this. I will get calls from my clients at 9:30, 10 o'clock. And because I've set up boundaries, I will not take those calls. I'm spending time with my wife at that point. My kids are in bed.
Expectations.
However, if my agents call me at 9:30 or 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night, I know that there's obviously in it. They're not out partying. They're not calling me. They're not drunk dialing me. They're not butt dialing me. They're not looking for a ride home.
You're calling me.
True enough. But they are calling because there's an issue. And I have told every single agent that's either come and left or stayed behind to build what we're building, you have 24/7, 365 access to me. And I'll tell you what, the bar camp that we had a couple of days ago, Cliff Stevenson said this as well. He says, I got into this business thinking that at the beginning that I was actually going to have more time building this team. It's the absolute opposite. The opposite. Because he gives so much of himself. He believes so wholly in the mentorship mentality towards his agents. He has very little time.
But see, I think that's probably unique, or not necessarily unique, but rare in the brokerage model today.
I agree.
I don't think that's necessarily bad, but I think it's maybe time to swing that pendulum back the other way. I
mean, yep.
My background in this business goes back 35 years, and I remember we used to do the same thing. I was a manager. We would take calls from our agents anytime, all the time. But the pendulum swung, and whatever business models or whatever it was, I mean, brokerages have to make money.
The brokerage model is very...
And I'm not saying it's broken, but it's different. And it's actually one of the broker sessions today, or the franchisor session, there's some discussion about how the new model for brokerages is looking a lot like the model it was 30 years ago. Back to full service or more services and
agents, you know where they're getting those ideas from? They're getting those ideas from the team leaders that believe fully in that business model.
Couldn't agree more, and that's where I want to go with Jeff. Jeff, because you get to see all, you know, the real size five, you see things from such a big picture scope. The role of the broker in the impression isn't the role of a team leader. They're very different roles. Yet you're working in at a brokerage trying to change culture. And generally, where do you, when you get reviews back, do you find that generally teams become a bigger and bigger player in the real estate industry, are able to provide a much consistent, higher level because they've got the, by nature, have to have systems in place compared to the individual agent? And because I think team leaders, like you just said, are fulfilling the dream broker model, but that's not really what brokers do.
I see both sides of it, because we've got brokers who get tremendous success because they actually take an active role in communication, they take an active role in training, they put systems in place that they expect people to use, they treat their business like businesses. And so I see teams too that do a crappy job of this.
Yes.
So I see both sides of that equation. You know, the team structure isn't the miracle cure for anything either. You've still got a leader at the front of a group of people who's setting down expectations and requiring people to meet those expectations, regardless of the employment status of the people who are set to do that. And there's something about the misconception around the relationship between broker and agent and team leader and agent that gets lost in all the discussions of 1099 employees and labor laws and all these other things that has absolutely nothing to do with labor laws at all. It's about somebody deciding they're going to be a leader and they're going to decide to actually bring people along in a way that gets them to do it because they want to do it. They see the value in doing it. They see that there's a benefit in doing it. So there are a lot of really great team leaders who do that. It's sometimes born out of the fact that they don't feel like they, because they're a team leader, not the broker, and that the relationship between them and the team isn't the same as the relationship between the broker and the team. They don't have the baggage that sits around all of that labor law bullshit. Can I say bullshit on the show?
I think it's YouTube. It's YouTube. You just did.
Yeah. That gets in the way. And so that sort of, that gets swept away, and they're allowed to be just great leaders. But nothing prevents a broker from being a great leader. Nothing. Not a business model, not labor laws, nothing. Nothing prevents them being a great leader. Someone who understands it's my responsibility to raise the level of performance for all of the people underneath me. My responsibility is to say, I've got a standard. This is it. I'm going to define it clearly.
And either you're going to follow the standard.
Right. This isn't about knocking the hammer down. It's not about slave labor. It's not about any of that. It's about, this is the standard. I set expectations. You work in a way that allows people to see the benefit of those expectations for themselves personally and in their career. You reward and you punish. If people can't meet that standard, have them go pursue a career someplace else.
Okay,
that's the broker
problem, though.
Yeah.
In the square footage rental system of the brokerage, it's kind of nice to have that guy not be fired. Like, is that not part of the issue?
But that's the choice you make. That's the choice you make. I was going to say too that the choice is there whether they do it or not. You know, but the old days, we used to be afraid to let somebody go because they'll go to somebody else and make a whole bunch of money.
It's still the same way.
It needs to change, and that's where I think it is changing. I hope it's changing.
Why do you think it's changing?
I think it's just the business model now. That if teams like Kelly's or yours or can prove that they're more successful by looking after their agents and making them be successful. That's the other thing.
You were adamant. You were adamant in the tech conference the other day, right? I mean, you were as vocal as anyone.
It makes me angry. I'm passionate about my industry.
So you're in with a room of people who say, we can't get our agents to do X, or we can't demand that they do X. We can't do this. We can't do that. And you're sitting there literally steamy. Yeah. You can see the steam coming out of your ears. You're red. Quite frankly, inappropriate at times. Basically saying, no, you can, and here's why, and you've got to present the benefits, and you have to demand that this is the way it is. And that's a foreign language to most of these.
Let me interject for 1 second. So I work with people on exactly this stuff, like getting your values and your clarity and your mission and your vision without it being just that silly poster on your wall that nobody reads and there's no buy-in, because I have
so
much.
Proud.
I do, and I learned so much from you.
I can speak to that 100%.
We walk our clients through very, very intensive exercises to get to precisely that clarity and that definition that will inspire them and their leadership and their teams, etc. And but boy, do we get pushback from a lot of people who don't see the value in wasting your time on fluffy words. And
it's hard until it's not.
Right?
Yes.
Okay,
but
it's
if
hard
you
until
can
it's
show, they aren't you can show words, that that's going to be
belief.
Successful.
And what does that mean to your business?
If there's a belief in a system, in a process, in an experience, and you're absolutely believing in it, it's very easy to transfer that to the agents that are either working in your brokerage or working on your team. If you're, and I think it has everything to do with what is your end goal in mind. Is your end goal in mind to really truly elevate the client experience and make it the best it possibly can, or is your goal to make as much money as you possibly can? Right. Every book, any leadership book that you've ever read, tell me one passage in that book that doesn't talk about giving first rather than getting, right? There isn't one leadership book that does. I think that's the fundamental flaw at the brokerage level as well as the team leader level. We are, as team leader, we're humans, we're flawed. As a human being, you want to get before you give, right? Most people don't have the patience to sit back and say, I'm going to give you as much as I possibly can, Jeff. And at some point in the future, karma will come back. But you know what? I'm not going to sit here and count the days before it actually comes back. I truly want to give to you, and I want to help you in whatever way I possibly can without expectation.
Okay, so then I want to hear from all of you, but we'll put it on Jeff too as well. Is you said that isn't it the job of the team leader to say, here's what we need to deliver? That sounds great, but how does a team leader, an individual agent, a broker define what we do in 2015, what we need to deliver? Like, how do we decide? How do we go through?
I'm sorry.
I don't care, because that's your job. Your job is to figure out what that is. But we're all acting like these leadership principles are some mystery.
But the actual fundamental steps to deliver a great experience to a real estate customer. I don't mean from a leadership issue. I mean talking to six people on the panelist thing. But is it real satisfaction? Is it going back examining satisfaction?
My job is to, our company's job is to measure the quality of the job that's performed. Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The job of the manager broker is to understand exactly what they want to do. And what something you said a few minutes ago actually struck me really hard, because you said as a board, as an association, you set up a bar that's a minimum standard.
Okay, no, that's a regulator.
Regulator, you set a minimum level. Competition gets to compete above that level.
That's right.
Exactly.
So you have chosen a very specific path. And one of those paths includes, we're going to be paperless, right? Right? That's your decision. Have you decided that 100% has to be paperless or it's not working in my business?
Yes.
Yes. Maybe that's it.
Yeah. Okay.
But you each get to make that. Those tactical things are not as important as the decision to not accept less than whatever tactical decision, whatever values you've put in place, whatever structure you've decided on. That's less important than the decision to hold people accountable to a standard.
Fine, but
a standard's less important than accountability.
Do you think there was people in your session today who went, oh, I need to work on that. I need to work on this. I think by hearing back from a consumer who had extremely reasonable expectations, that hearing from them didn't bother me because they weren't talking to me. But I'm sure they were talking to maybe two or three people in that room where they went, yeah, that's me.
Well, there was one or two that got up at the mic.
Okay,
you can definitely tell that.
You're a real satisfied client. I know Jeff is humble as they come.
Yes.
Do you look at that and go, in this team meeting, we're improving here?
Yes.
Like how has that been a benefit to define your standard? Maybe that's my question.
Every team meeting that we have, we have our team charter out on the table, and we look at our uncompromising values, we look at our core values, and then we tie it back into how did, for example, there was a property that was, I found out a little bit later on, these people were meth dealers, okay? We had a showing request on their property. I listed the house on a Monday, showing request came through on a Wednesday. I could not get a hold of them for at least 24 hours. I did research, I Googled their name. I found out that they were arrested back on December 11th for possessing a pound of meth and $120,000 of Canadian cash in their house, which is like 100 grand US. Anyways, that's easy math. Anyways, my point is it was an easy decision for me because I know what my values are. My values are honesty and integrity and you know, these things that these people didn't have. And it was an easy decision for me to say, I'm pulling the pin, we're canceling the listing, we're taking them off the market, and we're not representing them anymore. And for me to go into a team meeting and explain this to my agents and say, listen, I did this because I have integrity, and I'm not going to sacrifice that for a dollar. Not a dollar, not 50 cents, not 10 cents.
But none of that, Kelly, was a mirror examination. You didn't need to look in the mirror to realize that. But shouldn't we in the industry look in the mirror, contact our clients, figure out where we met, like, how do we continually improve? I mean, every other business surveys their customers.
Yeah.
When I buy a Toyota, I get 30 surveys every month for the next 50 months because I think they generally want that information.
Hey, I had a client that did a testimonial through or a survey through Real Satisfied that was not happy with their experience with the home inspector that we had recommended. So I called them and I said, what was the issue? And I'm asking you this not because I'm giving you shit or I'm mad. I'm asking you because I want to improve the process.
And you may not have found that out.
I would not have.
This is the
thing, right? They would have internalized it. They would have told all of their friends and family, right?
The objective here is, if you've set a standard, whatever that is, the standard means nothing if you have no way of measuring whether or not the standard gets met.
That's right.
And I think that the most important aspect in all of this, though, is setting the standard. Each individual broker at that, because the management happens at the broker level.
That's right.
The rubber meets the road with the broker. Every broker has to be willing to commit themselves to that. It's got to be a standard. You've got to set it. You have to be able, I don't care what methodology you use, you have to be able to determine, is that standard being met consistently? And if it's not, make the decision about what you're going to do about it. Or stick your head in the sand and ignore it.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. So I'm a broker, and my model is such that I require so many people to generate so many dollars so that I can cover my operating costs.
Yep.
I have a standard.
Yep,
But if I stick to that standard, it's entirely possible I may be out of business.
It's entirely possible.
Right. So the problem is this.
Well, then you've got a stupid standard.
You're so absolute.
No,
I think hold on.
Let me play devil's advocate for that.
Yeah.
I think it's possible for someone to be very straightforward. If their values are, I want to extract the highest dollar amount from every consumer I meet, it is your responsibility. If you work for me, your responsibility is to go out there and extract the highest dollar product. We will never discount our commission. We will do this. It's possible. If you do that, to attract people who also want to do that and who will also follow through on that. But even in that, if you're not measuring that appropriately, you will still fail.
Yes.
But if you hold people accountable to that, you attract people who want that, it's possible for you to be accessible being a complete asshole. As long as you attract other assholes.
So Bill, Bill from, I know, I love this guy. So from an association level, how do you guys see what's happening in the lay of land? How do you assess what's going on to constantly look at that and improve from an association level? I mean, we're talking about team leaders and brokers, but association, how are you assessing how things are rolling out?
Well, that's a great question. And again, we have, I mean, obviously our committee levels are always looking for things where they can improve. I mean, our technology council recommended the real status. And I think I was going to say earlier, that's a way that, again, an association can help raise the bar.
Yeah.
But of course, we've done it, and I think the only way it can be done is on a voluntary level, that our members have the opportunity to use the service if they want and see if it works for them. But we're looking at other things, the MLS and what's happening in other places, other boards, whatever. But also our young professionals are always looking at ways they can, and recommendations. And we have a young professional member on every committee that has an opportunity to provide input on what they would like to see and where, you know, again, from the old guys network, do something different. I mean, what do you see that we should be doing differently? And our members, I mean, the membership surveys, you know, they're good, but they don't always come up with earth-shattering ideas. So we need to, and it's sometimes they do, but we need to look at all that.
Do you think that that's important?
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
Do you think that that's important to try to draw the younger agents in to help maybe balance out the perspective of the average age of the average realtor in the Calgary Real Estate Board is like 56 years old.
Yep.
I'm sure that it's the same thing in Saskatchewan.
Yep.
And so if that is important, then if that is important, then why is it that more younger agents aren't coming into the fold and wanting to do that? Like where is the attraction for them to actually give their time and to elevate and raise the bar?
Well, I think you have to make it worthwhile to them and see what they want to gain from it. I mean, we've had actually we still have some spots open from what in. We'd love to have more. But overall, we haven't had a lot of trouble getting the volunteers to commit to that. And we've seen now some of the young professional members moving on to the board of directors and bringing that. And so it's just you've got to open the door to them and have them involved and welcome them. I think the important thing is for me as an old guy to not say, oh no, we tried that before, it's never been
right.
That just can't happen.
I got to pat Bill on the back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Listen, he took a risk in bringing Real Satisfied in at the association level. The risk is,
I think you guys cut a lot of flack for that.
On the heels of the rated agent thing here in Canada, and that failed miserably at the national level, took a big risk in bringing it in. But here's, he believed something, I think, that this was a necessary step, that this notion that consumers had a desire to express their opinion, and that agents, if they were given the opportunity to do this in a way that, you know, was not scary, that they would do it. This morning, Phil and I talk about numbers all the time. So we looked at the last 7 days in Canada. The vast majority of Canada is ASR, okay? The last 7 days in Canada, 66% of consumers who were surveyed completed a survey.
Wow.
What it says to me is they want to tell you what they think. They want to be heard.
Does the agent not want to hear?
That's the question.
I don't think they know.
I think they've been filled with a lot of hype. They've filled a lot of fear around agent reviews and ratings. And again, what we do is totally different from that. But that fear around agent ratings and reviews keeps them from seeking feedback, the kind of feedback that can make them better. And so, again, 30% of their board is doing this. 30%.
Yeah.
That's huge.
I want to say, too, first of all, it wasn't just me. I mean, I support it totally. But our technology council and then our full board of directors, it was a no-brainer at our board of directors. So it's not, and again, I mean I love to see that it's there, and it's great that you guys pat me on the back, but it wasn't just me, it was our whole organization, and they have that, they want to see it happen. And again, I think part of that 30% is because it was there. We had some really big pushback from some of the major brokers, And they were one of our first broker model customers.
Right.
That once they found out what they could do, it was better than what they were doing already. They were already doing some stuff. But they found it was so much easier and better than what they were doing. It was automatic. I think we just have to get the word out.
That's fantastic that brokers are using. I don't want this to become like
satisfied. My point is the consumer, the opinion out there seems to be consumers aren't going to do this, or the result of it is that it's going to be bad news, or the result of it is, oh my God, my whole life's going to be destroyed because somebody's going to write something bad about
me. You lose control of your reputation because it's out there and anyone can do whatever they're going to do. And that's the fear.
But that's your responsibility, whether you take the initiative to take action or not. That's the reality.
If you don't want to lose your reputation, then don't quit being a jackass.
Don't do something
right?
That'll do that.
Stop. So I love it.
Quote of the day: if you don't want to have a bad reputation, stop being a jackass.
Exactly. And if that is the nugget,
that's a tweet.
Write this down. Hashtag.
Okay, tweet
that shit.
So, okay, go ahead. Finish your thought.
I love the idea of brokerage. Now, in the ideal world, a brokerage would have something like a Real Satisfy that they can have all of these reviews coming in for their agents. And in a brokerage, being a true leader, would sit down with each individual agent and say, listen, over the course of last month, you've done 4 transactions. We've gotten, based off of your statistics, 1.5 or 2 reviews back. One of them was really bad. The other one was really good. Let's focus on the really good and then translate that back to the bad and see where you can improve and make those improvements. And so when you, in the next month, you know that you're going to get, instead of one bad review and one good review, there's a very good chance that you're going to get 2 good reviews instead of the opposite. And I think that's, if the associations came down and said, you need to have agent reviews for each one of you. And it's, we talked about this yesterday at the tech talks where somebody stood up and said, well, you can't hammer this down my agent's throat and my brokerage because I'm going to start losing agents.
Yeah, and there's got to be
a point.
If it's the right thing, maybe you need to lose those agents.
Exactly. See, that's how a business should say. It's this dichotomy between every individual being their own. See, a team leader thinks that way because it's a completely fundamentally different thing. The success of his agents reflect on his future success. A brokerage is about every head in a seat pays me $800.
Like, really? What it's about.
I think it is.
I don't think every brokerage model is that way. I think broaching brokerage that way is wrong. I think there are some brokerages out there, and big ones too, who are not Beverly Hanks, Nabom. I'm looking at a whole bunch of independent brokers in the United States who just do a kick-ass job of training their agents, holding them accountable, doing the right things. And so, yes, I think there are certain models that lend themselves to bad management. I think bad management happens in any business.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, but again, all of these things happen in different stratas. Ultimately, it does come down to a broker, though. I can be a broker in a model that has, as a business model, butts in seats. And if I'm doing my job right, I can probably keep good butts in seats.
Yeah,
if I really want good butts in seats.
Right. Granted. Kelly, this is where I wanted to go with you, because on the car ride out here, we're talking about who inspires us in the industry, who's pushing things forward on all levels. And I just, there was a great car ride up, and I just said to you, what do you think is the most progressive board in Canada? And you said, I mean, biased is, look at this thing. I mean, he's got his own. But you said, I think it's Calgary. So is that innovation? Is that listening to their agent? Is that leadership? What makes you think that your board is the best? And can those habits that create that opinion between you and obviously fellow agents, what is it happening that can be duplicated in other boards throughout the country and through the states?
I think at the end of the day, it falls down to the leader and the leader of the board, ultimately. And if he's got a vision and it's clearly stated, and he's got everybody within that organization behind that vision, and everybody can clearly execute that vision, I think that translates down into the membership. And you will get greater buy-in from the membership and saying, you know what? I see where these guys are going with this. I can see how it can improve my business. Therefore, I'm going to buy in for at least 3 to 6 months.
Why do you think Calgary's so progressive? Like where other boards have been a little slow in dragging their feet, why is Calgary?
Well, we talked specifically about a couple of boards, one being over on the other side of the country. I'm not going to name who it is. Anyways, if we're talking about progression, we're talking about boards that have adopted certain technologies, allowed their agents to do certain things, have given greater control to not just the agents but the brokerages, and allow them to be innovative in their own right, as opposed to having a massive organization saying, you know what, you're not allowed to have a virtual website, you're not allowed to have IDX. If I had a discussion with a guy the other day.
What kind of website is it virtual?
Well, we're talking about virtual office website where, you know, you've got to opt in, right?
I was lost there for a second.
I had a discussion with an agent the other day from Manitoba.
This is my website.
Yeah. Who's sitting right over here. And you know, he said to me, and this is I could not believe this. Absolutely blew my mind. He said, I cannot advertise my board's listings on my website because the board thinks that it's an unfair advantage. And I looked at him and I said, so if I was an agent in your market and I had a big bloody billboard sitting there on the side of the highway, would that give me an unfair advantage? If I have every single bus bench in every single neighborhood in your town, would that give me an unfair advantage? Like, come on, where do we draw the line here? This is absolutely ridiculous. And this is coming from the board level.
It's on consumer mind.
I may be corrected, but I'm pretty sure that's in provincial legislation.
Sure.
I don't think it's a board rule.
Okay.
So I don't think a board could actually say that. But it's a provincial legislation that, again, my view, I used to work there. Probably needs to be changed.
Maybe they need a virtual butt whipping.
But it's, I mean, that's the process that takes some time, but I don't disagree that it's wrong, but it's not the board's.
Oh, we got about 5 minutes left.
I wanted to ask one more question before we wrap it, innovation for innovation's sake. I know this is a subject.
This was so great with Jeff during the tech talk. It makes me, my heart sing as a guy who loves tech and pushing forward. There's still reason behind that happening. And you, I don't know if you, you talking about me starting to get a little fiery.
Yeah.
I know it was bothering you.
No.
Because I love technology and I've built my whole entire career around technology. But I don't put technology ahead of people. I don't put technology around a business practice. I don't technology around strategy. You have to understand what it is you're trying to accomplish. And then you go find technologies that allow you to do that better. That's the way it's supposed to work.
Love that.
And unfortunately, what ends up happening is people come to a conference, maybe a conference like this. They hear some speaker stand up on a stage. They talk about some great technology. They go, oh, this technology is awesome. They take it back, and then they start figuring out, what do I need to do to change my business to fit this technology? That is the most backwards thing you could possibly do. And yet, I see it happen all the time.
I'm going to get this credit to you too, Michael. That's your session tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's going to hit exactly that.
Yeah.
It's not the wrench that makes a good mechanic.
Yeah.
What a great title.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody that's watching, that's here at the conference, will come and see Michael tomorrow. But that's the whole point of this.
It is the whole point of this.
It's great, but
it's funny because last season we brought on every major CRM on the show, and we asked them to give us an agent that's using your CRM. We want to hear from the agent's perspective. And what we found was it had a lot more to do with the personality of the agent that made the CRM good.
Yes.
And so when we always say, I always see the phone ring, Michael, you interview, what's the best CRM? For me, like, what's my favorite football team? It's not so everyone has their own fit. Everyone has their own fit. But that's not exclusive to CRM. That's the type of video. That's to
what's
all
the
of
best
them.
Camera?
Yeah.
The
yeah.
one you'll use. What's yeah. what's the best
It's the one you'll use. When I sold, I was guilty of looking for what's the tool that's gonna really help me, right? Like I was looking
Magic
for
bullet.
Help. And part of that is because frankly, I was struggling on my own.
If
I
you
didn't
put,
have
if you put the
I
client,
didn't have systems.
If you put the client right there and you decide you figure out what the client needs, there are other technologies that will revolve around that client that will help improve the experience. And that's exactly what you're talking about.
There has to be a filter for how you evaluate technology. And that filter evaluates not just technology. That filter evaluates behavior, evaluates tactics, evaluates how you run your meetings.
Is it a function of the diet pill society we're in? Is that what it is? Just fix it.
Fix it.
But now, can you expand on that filter discussion? Because I think we talk a lot at a high rhetorical level and never really understand what we're even talking about. You know what you're talking about, but maybe we don't.
For example, Kelly went through the process, and I don't know whether you're the one who helped him with it or not, were you?
Yes. I had already created a charter of vision values, but they really helped me get clear with everything.
I'm not going to talk about this long. Values. If a value cannot be an actionable decision-making partner for you, it's not a real value.
Right.
If you're sitting in a meeting and you can't say, we can go this way or that way, which way best leads us to, how are we living that value by doing that? If your values don't come to that level, they're worthless.
That's right.
They're worthless. And so when I'm talking about those kinds of filters, those filters allow you to sift everything down through it. Does this piece of technology allow me to accomplish all that? Does this decision I'm making? And that, to me, is like business 101, the basics. You don't nail that, you're going to struggle with everything. You're going to flux back and forth. You're going to make decisions that make no sense. Basic business 101.
And that's so true. Clarity and like true north focus.
That's
what John Montgomery was talking about, like having everything else gets quiet and I'm so hyper focused. That's how you achieve that. I agree. I think this was great.
This has been my favorite session of Banff Western Conference, this little thing right here.
This has
been good. This has been fantastic. And we could go on this but I like the different perspectives that are here. Before we say goodbye to everyone, on a personal note, Bill, thanks for inviting me to come here. It is a fantastic conference. There's something special that happens when it's just not a brand conference. There is something happens when there's this meeting of people that you respect. I think there's a lot more collaboration in our industry in the last 5 years than there was prior, which I hope is a momentum that keeps going. It's only going to help us raise the bar and have these conversations. Thank you so much for having us. On that note, Kelly, takeaway. I'll ask my co-host. I asked Dave at the end of every show, what's your takeaway? You're Dave today. Dave, much better looking Dave. What's your takeaway?
I don't even know Dave.
What's your takeaway from a conversation like this?
I could have just sat here and just listened, obviously. I knew we were going to have a very rich conversation. I've known these gentlemen for so long. I think that we're on the right track. I think that when we keep hammering away at values and vision and clarity and defining what we're doing and where's our standard and getting that filter really clear, I do think is really important. I think that the Banff Western Connect is the best Canadian conference, hands down, and possibly one of the best conferences I've been to ever. I always come back. This is my third. I will be back again next time. I so appreciate the hard work that you put in. I just think you are the dearest man. I love it.
We love doing it. Just the feeling we get when people are here. We see it tonight. We see it tomorrow night, all the way through. As Michael said, the collaboration is there. It doesn't matter who you work for. Doesn't matter what company, whatever. Everybody's here to share their information, to share their knowledge. We just love it. We just love having everybody here. And to sit with this group has been a great thrill for me. So I love it. Hope we do it again. I hope you guys all come back every time we have this.
Awesome.
Event.
Absolutely. Kelly, how do people get a hold of you in Calgary and the real estate group?
They can reach me on my cell phone, 403-827-7527. You can get me by email, Kelly, KELLEY. At uprealestategroup.com.
And you'll get your Seahawks stick tomorrow when I'm on stage.
I'm not. You know what? I'm not. I don't care. I'm watching the game.
Terry.
Go Patriots.
Terry, how do people find you? Agent Quest so-and-so.
Yeah, at agentquest.ca or at Terry Conrad, T-E-R-I, Conrad, the end.
Jeff, how do people get a hold of you and Real Satisfied?
Jeff at realsatisfied.com or realsatisfied.com.
I love it. So simple. Bill, how do people get a hold of you and find more information about the Banff Western Connect?
Okay, a couple of things. Twitter at SaskRealtors Bill Matter at SaskatchewanRealEstate.com, spell it out. And of course, BanffWesternConnection.com. All the stuff is there. And actually, just watch BanffWesternConnection.com. We will have stuff up about 2017, probably middle of next year. So hope you'll all take a look at that and come back and see us.
And we'll make sure those links are all included.
We will. Yeah. We'll put all the links down below. And for our regular viewers, we'll be back on the air next Friday, February already, the 6th. We're going to do a special episode with some great agents that are giving back in the community. We're going to talk about the value of being involved in your community, the value about giving back as an agent. It's going to be an interesting conversation. And then we're moving on to the next week. We'll be talking about farming in 2015. So thank you, everyone, for watching. I appreciate it. Thank you to our amazing guests. A fantastic conversation. We'll see everybody next week.